Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Film Haven Reviews. I'm your host Sawyer, as always, and today, what a breath of fresh air. Dick Tracy, the 1990 film Warren Beatty, starring and directing as Dick Tracy. And after last week's disappointment, and I don't want to harp on last week's movie too much, Dark Man, I think I might end up comparing them a little bit just because, I mean, that's what the theme is, right? I mean, they came out the same year. They both got a trench coat, fedora-wearing protagonist, and they both have comic book vibes. Now, Dark Man, to be clear, is not a comic book movie. It is based off of comic book movies, kind of, like Batman and The Shadow, which would come out a few years later, but as I had said before, Sam Raimi wanted to make The Shadow and wasn't able to, and so he made this. And then I was talking to someone on Instagram who told me that he was supposed to make a Batman movie, and so he made this instead. So why they're both are true or only one are true, it's very clear that Darkman was inspired by comic books but is not actually a comic himself. Well, I think eventually he does turn into a comic character, but it was a movie first, whereas usually it's the other way around. Anyway, so Dick Tracy, this movie, man, I was pleasantly surprised. I actually was expecting, after watching Darkman, seeing the 1990, and I was kind of like, oh, I've been wanting to see this movie for a long time, so I had a little bit of excitement about it. And I had to buy the movie, like I had to order it, because it's not on streaming anywhere. I don't know what's going on, but it definitely needs to be seen more, as we will see later. There's a lot of things in it that I'm just like, wow, this movie is too kind of great to not be seen by the general populace. But I also want to caveat that my voice, I'm having a throat issue, so if I sound kind of more hoarse or a different tone in my voice, then that is why. But we're gonna work through it. It's gonna be fine. It actually kind of works perfect for Dick Tracy, because a lot of characters are like, yeah, I'm Dick, and I'm a mobster, and then you got like the Irish police captain, and it's pretty iconic. It's very 1930s, 1940s, and there's a reason for that. So I particularly and specifically did not look up much about Dick Tracy before going into the movie, because I kind of wanted to just experience it without context. And you could definitely tell that there are some iconic things in the movie that you could just kind of get the vibe that it's referencing things in the comic strip. And that the reason, first of all, is that all the characters, all these prosthetics that they have on their faces, that was like the first thing that hit me. You have like all the mobsters and stuff, and even some of the cops and stuff, they all have these crazy prosthetics. And it's definitely trying to, because this is like an old comic strip from like the 30s, and so I'm sure a lot of these characters' faces were very distorted, and you know, to give them characterization, over dramatic and just larger than life kind of characterizations. And what this movie did that was so great was that it actually like brought these characters to life through practical effects, through these, I mean, incredible makeup, honestly. I mean, it's silly. It looks really like, it doesn't look real, but that's definitely not the point. And I wonder, actually, I didn't look this up, but I'm going to look it up right now. I can't tell. This movie definitely should have gotten some kind of Oscar nominations or something for like makeup and art direction too. Is just so good. We'll get into that in a little bit, but I'm looking this up. Oh my god, yeah, so it did win. It won 3 Oscars. It won for best direction and set decoration, best makeup, best music original song. It got a nomination for Al Pacino for best supporting role, cinematography nomination, costume design, sound. Okay, so this movie did get some love in 1990. Which is crazy that this movie is so hard to find. It must be something to do with copyrights or something, because it is such an event. It really is, and I'm so glad that I bought it. I mean, I really made this entire theme just based around this movie because I've been wanting to see it for a long time, and it did not disappoint. This is exactly the kind of movie that I was looking for when I made this theme. It is very much a noir nostalgia. It's a nostalgia for the 30s and Art Deco and this larger than life kind of sensibilities. And it did the stuff that I wanted Darkman to do more of. For example, yes, It is a callback to the old gangster mobster movies. It's a callback to, I mean, it's obviously based off of a comic book, a comic strip that was created in the 30s, but it also modernizes it. It uses the modern technology that 1990 had to offer and creates an entirely new experience. You are set for sure within this 1930s realm, but at the same time, you are seeing set design, art design, special effects that are state of the art. Maybe not even, I don't know if state of the art's the right word, but they look a way that I miss, honestly. Like, it is very reminiscent of the Tim Burton Batmans with those really incredibly intricate painted backdrops. There's a lot of those, but then it also, the way that they blend those backdrops into the actual scene, into the studio, into the sets, I don't even know how they did it. Like, I can't even wrap my mind around it. There's sometimes, there's one shot at the beginning of the movie where you really get a good pan out of the whole city, and it's, oh, I mean, it's just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. The tiered layers of pink and purple and blue cities and the skyline in the background of the downtown area, and it's kind of panning out as you see in real time, like in an actual shot, a real car driving around the front of the set, and then it pans more into the painted backdrop and it goes farther in, and there's this back left corner that it zooms up on, and there's the one of the main locations, the Ritz. And once again, it's a real person getting out of a car going into the Ritz. And I'm like, I'm so confused because I'm like, how did you do that? Like, you are on a painted backdrop. You are, for all intents and purposes, looking at like what would today be a green screen. And yet you're going kind of behind it. And there is a set that is set up behind that. I mean, I can see 100% why it won the Oscar for art decoration and set design, because oh my God, like, my mind was blown. I mean, almost every other scene, like transitionary scenes or establishing shots to go into the next scene or leaving a scene, there is just these immaculate, like perfect, like color perfect, great sense of depth, painted backdrops that were just, I mean, I'm mind blowing. Honestly, like, it was such a treat to watch just for that alone. Even if the movie was kind of bad, I would have still gotten a high rating, to be honest, because the style is incredible. The way that they, I mean, this, in my opinion, just fresh off the watching it last night, I really feel like this is one of the best comic book movies I've ever seen, or comic strip movies. I know Dick Tracy also became a comic book as well, so he has runs on a comic strip and a comic book, but as far as a movie turned from a comic onto the screen, there's only a few movies that I think have really done that well, where you really get the feeling like you're watching a comic on screen. And a lot of that is the painted animated backdrops. And that is why I've said this before and I'll say it a million times, I want more movies to embrace this design again. And I know it's honestly probably harder than CGI is these days because the infrastructure isn't set up for that. But then again, we had movies last year like Poor Things that really did a great job at creating practical sets, and they got rewarded for it for sure. They did very well at the Oscars. So I just, like, I know it is happening, but it is an aberration when it does. And I just feel like I see nothing wrong. And I think you may be surprised, like I'm talking to the studios. I think the studios may be surprised at how many, you know, lay people, regular viewers would enjoy watching movies in the same vein as this film, Dick Tracy, because it really just, it pops on screen. It incites your imagination. It really sets you into this world. It's a fantasy world of a 1930s, you know, Chicago. And I really loved how larger than life everything felt. Everything felt larger than life. Even Dick Tracy's fedora and trench coat were way too big for him. And it totally worked because that's how the character looks. And that's what the whole point is, to be a little over the top. The acting was very, very overdramatic, melodramatic, kind of like Darkman, but because everything else worked for this, all the tones were pitch perfect. They didn't really change the tones. And it was really silly, campy. You had tons of the silliness in it because it is a comic.
it's a comic strip, and so these characters are overacting, and some of these, especially the bad guys, the mobsters, you know, they all got names like Littleface and Big Boy Caprice, and you know, and Al Pacino is Big Boy Caprice. Oh my God, he just absolutely kills it. At first, I was like, he's a little much. This is crazy. I mean, he's got the prosthetics on his little. He's got like extended chin, and they've got his body all weird, like he's got a hunchback or something, and he's really short, and he's super animated. I can totally see how he got a supporting actor. I'm actually surprised that they gave it to him because it is such a silly role, but he killed it so much. I remember I was like halfway through, and I was watching it with Allie, and I was just like, man, they did such a good job casting Al Pacino as this character because he is killing it. He's also silly. It's a funny character. Like, it's supposed to be funny. He's a bad guy for sure, but he's also like, he's cartoonish. Everyone is very cartoonish, but in a way that is not annoying. It's a way that is actually very endearing and authentic. It feels very authentic. It's like I said, it's probably one of the most authentic comic book movies I've ever seen because it really gives that feeling of having a comic book being relayed to the big screen, and those, it's epic too. There's an epicness to that as well. There's like those, like I was saying, those backdrops, and the story is so classic, but at the same time they hit all the emotional notes right. I didn't even say, of course, as soon as the title screen comes up, as soon as the beginning, the score hits, I'm like, are you serious? Did Danny Elfman do this one too? And yes, Danny Elfman did the score for this movie, which totally makes sense. It makes sense for the movie, but it's also hilarious that I had no intention within these two movies, Darkman and Dick Tracy. I just saw a similarity of style. I had no idea that Danny Elfman was even doing Darkman, much less Dick Tracy. So we'll see The Shadow. Maybe he does that one too. We'll have to find out. I will say, like, Danny Elfman always does good, but in this movie, I really felt like he is one of his best that I've heard. Only not because of the iconicness of, like, I mean, you know, you know, that kind of Batman theme song is so iconic you can't get it out of your head. But at the same time, what I loved about this movie with Dick Tracy, with Danny Elfman and Dick Tracy, was that the softer tones, some of the more emotional, sentimental scenes, which could have so easily been felt super, like, corny in a way that was not good or overdone or just, like, makes you want to sigh. They felt so genuine while still being active within that old style. And I think a big part of that was Danny Elfman's, like, really sentimental score. The quieter notes of this film for him were really, like, bigger than what I've seen in other movies that he has done. And that gets us to the story. I mean, it is a complicated, in some ways, plot, because that's how it is. He's a detective, and detective stories have a little bit of, you know, there's all kinds of corruption and stuff. But basically, it's Dick Tracy. He's like this detective who always working. He's a workaholic, doesn't want to sit down, doesn't want to get promoted because he doesn't want a desk job. That's his whole thing. I don't want a desk job. And he has his girlfriend named Tess, and she's great, but she, at the same time, she wants him to settle down because, you know, he's always gone and always working, and it's very classic. And they, at the beginning of the movie, they kind of run into this street urchin who they kind of take under their wing, and they just call him Kid. He's like, what's your name? Kid. He's like, you don't have a name? He's like, hey, what's it to you? That's what the kid says. The kid has a lot of chutzpah. He's very ornery. Doesn't want to be taken to the orphanage because he wants to live his own life. He's very independent. And so they kind of like have this pseudo child. And because of that, there is this kind of push and pull between his job and staying, you know, around. The kid, honestly, is totally okay with him going because he wants to be a part of it. He wants to be the sidekick. You're like, oh, you're going to go get the bad guy? Come on, Dick. Let's get him. Let's get him. He's very endearing. I love that kid. He did such a good job. And then so as those stories are kind of coalescing and developing, there's also the mob story where Big Boy Caprice is trying to make a big move on the city. He's trying to take over the city one by, you know, one thing after another. And, you know, there's all these other mob bosses that he has kind of taken over. So he's now like kind of the big guy on campus. And he's taken over that Ritz, that nightclub, and he's trying to make a big show of it. He's trying to get in the show business. But Dick Tracy is for sure on to him. But they have such a complicated relationship, or such a close relationship with each other, that Big Boy Caprice knows that he can't just kill Dick Tracy, because if he did, then everyone would know he'd be the prime suspect and they'd figure it out. So there's this kind of cat and mouse where Dick Tracy is trying to get one over on Big Boy Caprice and finally get him, because he tries to arrest him using some pretty illegal procedures, not very good police work, because he knows that Big Boy Caprice is bad and he's in charge of everything. And so he's like, why can't I just nail him? If I could just get him into the jail, then we'll be good. But, you know, anyone who's watched any documentaries or true crime, anything, or know anything about mobsters, know that they're slicky. And you can't just bring them in for anything because they can get out. They got good lawyers, all that kind of stuff. So Big Boy Caprice gets out of jail 2 seconds, and they just basically are going in this back and forth tussle the whole movie, which is, of course, and there's a lot of side stuff going on, especially with Madonna's character, who is, she's got a very Dick Tracy name. I'm sure she's probably a character, Breathless Mahoney. And she's this nightclub girl. She was honestly pretty annoying for most of the movie, but I guess that was kind of her point. She's definitely the foil of relationship-wise with Dick Tracy. She's trying to get with Dick Tracy, and Dick Tracy has Tess, and I think he's attracted to Breathless Mahoney, but he knows that he should be with Tess, and so he stalls out a little too much on rejecting Breathless Mahoney, and in doing so causes a lot of problems with Tess. Rightly so, because Tess is too good for Dick Tracy. I just want to say that. I think eventually he brings it around, but he is not worth it there for a while. Warren Beatty, you slicky boy, you. Anyway, but you can already tell I was getting into it. Like, the relationship part, the drama, the melodrama, the soap opera-ish story, it really all blended so well together. There's also really good action. There's a few scenes of, you know, beat-em-ups, and in the beat-em-ups, it's quality stuff. You know, you had the really cartoonish, like, sounding pows and bangs sound effects when he's punching, but they have good little fight scenes, and then, of course, which is something that I was very much looking forward to, and, you know, I didn't know anything about Darkman, so I didn't know what time in place it was taking place in. It was definitely calling back to the 30s, but it was taking place in present day. And so there's a little bit that I can't really blame Darkman for not giving me what I was looking for when I didn't even know what the movie was exactly. But in this movie, you get what I was looking for, which was like Tommy Gunn, Thompson with the drum mag shooting, you know, the old 30s cars driving around, shooting up cars, and people shooting from the cars, and everyone's screaming and shooting like a million bullets and not caring about any of the bystanders that are around. But yeah, pretty much on every level, they delivered on that 30s, 40s mobster movie kind of vibe. In fact, just a little hint. I mean, I'm not doing it anytime soon, but I've definitely got it on my spreadsheet of doing a whole theme of actual mobster movies from like the 40s and 30s, especially I think 40s. There was a big time for that. And I really want to watch some of those old authentic ones because I think it'll be really fun. I've never really seen any of them, but I know of them. And I think that, you know, we see modern gangster movies like Goodfellas and stuff today. And it's like, okay, well, where are they getting that from? So let's go back and watch the old actual mobster movies from like Prohibition era. That would be cool. But I digress. Yeah, so I'm going to give this movie an 8.5. Oh, wow. I meant to say 8, but you know what? I love this movie, and I think that it deserves a lot. And now that I know that it won Oscars, not that the Oscars really mean anything, but I do know that I'm not crazy for thinking that most of the things in this movie were great. The only thing I could possibly complain about was Madonna, because her character was somewhat insufferable. And when I say somewhat, I say very much so. But at the same time, that was kind of her point. So it was funny. It was the drama was effective. It was emotional, sentimental. There was good action. The art direction was incredible. The actual story, the plot direction was great. I actually got into it. There's lots of backstabbing and little twists and turns that were going on. I mean, it's pretty much everything that you would want in a movie in general, not to mention a movie that is an adaptation or an adaptation of a comic book. And that's one of the fun things I learned too through this was now I have looked up some stuff on Dick Tracy. And did you know that Dick Tracy, which started, I don't remember exactly what year, but it was in the early 30s. It started in the early 30s, and it is still tentatively going. Yeah, it started in 1931, The person, the original person who created it, what's his name? Gould, Chester Gould. He retired in 1977. But I just saw, I just looked up a comic strip from 2023. Like, Dick Tracy is still going, like, in a comic strip form. And there may even be rumors of a Dick Tracy comic book being revitalized this year. So that's wild. I didn't realize his legacy was so loomed so large. And also, he has, like, for example, in the movie, you definitely, I knew, like, I was like, this has got to be a big thing for him. It's kind of like the show Get Smart, where the guy has the shoe phone. It's like that, but he's got a little watch that he uses like a walkie-talkie, but it's like a cell phone. And there's even been said that watch, when they implemented it, which I think was, they implemented it later on, like 1948, into the comic strip, but it became like instantly iconic for Dick Tracy's character, having this little watch where the cops are going to be like, Dick, you got to get down here. We got a robbery on 24th and 8th. And that kind of technology was so ahead of its time, really. And it was very sci-fi. But it was said that it was actually an inspiration for the mobile phone. Like, the cell phone was in some ways inspired by this technology that was written in the Dick Tracy comics. So really cool that they that was going on. And you can even say the smartphone as well. The smartwatch, which is funny because when I was watching it with Allie, and I was like, I love that little watch he's got. You know, that's in the comic strip. And then I was like, you know, that's, he's got his own little smartwatch before smartwatches were even close to being a thing. So that was cool. It's ahead of its time. The source material is, at least. Dick Tracy himself is a really interesting, has a lot of different eras. Obviously, if you have a comic strip that's been running since the 30s, I mean, it's almost 100 years of a comic strip running. Like, I don't know how consecutively it is, but I think it is. I mean, it's like, this is like newspaper. This is like, you know, Calvin and Hobbes, and I think the Peanuts were a news strip too. I'm a little out of my depth here, but the point is how crazy is that a comic strip can last that long? And how did I not know that? And they need to make another Dick Tracy movie. I mean, 1990, they'd probably ruin it, honestly. I don't mean to be like that. If it was done right, it could be incredible. But if they do another Dick Tracy movie, they need to do it in the same style from the 1990, because I think that would be such a breath of fresh air. And honestly, it would get more Oscars, like, straight up, because it's different. It's like a totally different style that you're not seeing. Poor Things did it. We hadn't seen that since the old Tim Burton era of that kind of, like, great practical backdrops and practical effects in your settings and your set designs. Doing that with Dick Tracy in, like, 2024, 2025, I mean, I think it would be so successful. I mean, and this movie was great. 8.5 out of 10. I really have no complaints besides Madonna. Everything else was just really well done, hitting on all fronts. And I just can't rave about it enough. I was very, very pleasantly surprised by this film. I'm glad that I own it on physical copy now, too, because now I can pop it in whenever I want. I don't have to worry about what streaming service it's on. So I'm glad that I bought it. I just wish that it would be available for more people to watch, because I think people would really enjoy it. So that's it for this week. Next week, we're getting into The Shadow. I have no idea, other than this was like kind of like Dick Tracy. It's a live action movie that's an adaptation of an old radio play serial, you know, like the serializations they used to do back in the day, where it's like, tune in next time to see if The Shadow gets his man, you know, that kind of thing, which I'm so excited to see how they do that in a live action setting, especially with Alec Baldwin being the lead in 1994, a young Alec Baldwin. How fun is that? So yeah, I hope you guys have a great week this week, and thanks for sticking with my little raspier voice than usual, and I will see you next Friday.